Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. It's Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. I am in Denver, Padres, Rockies, four games, and it's a four-game road trip. That's what you do now. At least second year in a row, might be going on three, where every time they play the Rockies, it is go to Denver, go home. Anyway, the Rockies stink. No, like really, really bad. They have five wins. They're 5-17. And get this, they have trailed in every game.
Wait, what?
They have trailed at some point in every game. They are the first team since the 1957 Washington Senators to have trailed in every game, at least 22 games into a season. Now, they have 11 games to go to break the Senators' record. Padres are here. The reason I started that way is, you know, the Padres really need to come in here and win this series. And I'm the guy always offering perspective about how long a season is, Ryan.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. And by the way, you know what you've just ensured? The Rockies will have a wire-to-wire lead and win tonight's game, because this is what happens in the world, Kevin, in our world. We mention streaks, and by mentioning them, sometimes they fall apart. But yeah, the Rockies are bad. And they, by the way, they could have been 4-18 today following that fan interference thing yesterday, Sunday afternoon's game. Did you get a chance to watch that? Did you see anything about that?
No, I saw that it happened, but I didn't really know.
The Rockies and Mariners played 9 scoreless innings yesterday. We can start there. That's crazy. 9 scoreless innings at Coors Field. Jacob Stallings has what appears to be a walk-off home run in the 9th inning.
Right.
Ball's hit to left center field. Rockies fan leans over the railing, interferes with the ball. Stallings rounds the bases. They go to video replay. They say, no. Fan touched it. Ground rule double. Next guy gets out. Game goes extra innings. Rockies rally to win in the 10th, 2-1. But man, that would have been a 1-0 9-inning game at Coors Field. And you can count those probably on what? All time. 2 hands? 3 hands? Tops?
Oh, tops. Yeah. It's what's funny is every time I go to research that, like the Padres would come here and they would get shut out or something like that. And I would go to the research, and I was always surprised that it happened more than I thought it would, especially back in the old days before the humidor, all that, you know. I missed Tadeo Nomo throwing the first no hitter here. But I did a kind of an oral history of it the year after it happened, my year on the Dodgers beat. And Eric Karros called it the most amazing feat in the history of baseball. Because at the time, I mean, that was, you came here and you played 5-hour games and it was 14-13. And not only that, like Nomo walked like 9 guys that night and somehow got out of these jams. Anyway, it's a little different now, but you are 100% correct. I just want to give some perspective here. The Padres did win both their series here last year, but they're coming off, I think the 2 years before that, they were 9-10 here. Mm-hmm. They lost the season series to the Rockies in 22. The Padres made the playoffs that year, despite that. Last year, I just want to contrast this. Like when you're saying, oh, but there's so much, and yeah, the season won't be over if they go, lose or split, whatever the series. So last year, among the things that you go, hey, Padres missed the playoffs by 2 games, all the close games, extra innings, all that. They, against the Rockies, I think were 8-5 or 9-4 against the Rockies. And the Diamondbacks were 10-3.
So there's your difference. Yep.
Right. You come to this place if you're a good team. And you win. Yes, the Rockies are better at home. Okay, but you come here and you win. That's what you do. You got Dylan Cease on the mound. You have Michael King, Matt Waldron. That should be interesting with the knuckleball. Thursday, get back to Randy Vasquez. I don't think that King and Cease, they pitched here once apiece and it didn't go well. But still, come on.
Well, and if we're talking about a path to the playoffs here, right? The one way to make it easy on yourself, or at least not so stressful on yourself, is to beat bad teams, right? If you can club the bad teams on your schedule, then if you can go 500 against everybody else, boom, you're in the playoffs, right? You don't need to sweep everybody you play. I think it's equally as important, Kevin, to avoid getting swept. And I think that's where I'd like to start.
Sure.
The Padres, I thought some sloppy baseball again but kind of did just enough to avoid getting swept by the Blue Jays following a stretch of what I think has been sort of uncharacteristically sloppy play. I think we've seen some base running issues. We've seen some defensive gaffes. What's happening here? Is this just ebb and flow of the season or a sign of something bigger?
I still want to say ebb and flow of the season, though obviously I've been documenting it, like, you know, all the times that it has happened, because that's what you do is you watch a season and then at some point you have to say, this is you know, a bigger thing. This is characteristic of a team. Here's a difference I see between like a good team and a not good team is what you just mentioned, a team that overcomes its mistakes, which the Padres could not do. Partially pitching, you know, wasn't very good the first couple nights, the starting pitching. And then yesterday, Joe Musgrove was excellent and gave up solo homers. And there weren't errors in the field. There were gaffes that perhaps cost them runs, but there was some excellent defense. But, you know, take Ha-Seong Kim, for instance, the uncharacteristic. Are we at three errors now? Are we at four? In between, the guy's reliable and like just predictably so. And he makes excellent plays with the range that he has. And that's like different than say an error prone guy. It just, and that's what the case is with a lot of their guys. Like, you know, sometimes maybe Tatis a little too exuberant, right? A little too talented out there in right field. I think he's at three errors. A couple of them have been costly. So answer your question is that I think it's the ebb and flow of the season.
Yeah. And you talk about ebb and flows too. You know, one night you might be on the bad end of some luck. And then, you know, you look at Sunday, and I think the Padres really benefited from a couple of fortunate things in that game. One of them being the ball girl interference play.
Certainly had the potential to be huge.
Yes, absolutely. Right. Ball hit down the line. Ball girl thinks it's foul. It's actually fair. She touches it. It's a ground rule double.
You watch it again. She might have been right. And that rookie umpire might have been wrong. But anyway, yes, it was called fair. She screwed up. It didn't end up. Like statistically, I don't know what's that law of something that you can't assume that right. Something would have happened the same if the event before it had been different. But the way the events went, it didn't. But Joe even said, you know, that probably helped me, right? It helped me stay in the game.
Yeah. It did. And yeah, again, like you spelled out in today's Padres Daily, there's no telling what Fernando Tatis Jr. might have done once he got to that ball, right? Maybe it's just a double. Maybe it's a double. Right. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's something more. Maybe that keeps the Blue Jays.
Maybe Tatis a little too exuberant out there. He throws home, doesn't get Turner for whatever reason. And then Varsho is on third base, and then the grounder scores him. And then, oh, this was huge. Now, Tatis would have been just as much to blame as that ball girl.
Yes. Well, and but, blaming you know, the ball, right. And again, and blaming the ball girl, you know, thank goodness San Diego is San Diego and not Chicago or New York, right? That poor ball girl might have been in some trouble if this was the kind of place where fans were mean like that. But ultimately, this may have helped the Padres. Again, there was a catcher's interference call, and I don't know if you count that as good luck, bad luck, or savvy baseball playing. But, you know, there from Tyler Wade, you know, a way to get on base. Padres scored a couple runs via the walk. The kinds of things that you don't necessarily see happen in most games. It seemed like those things broke their way.
Yes. And if I could use that as a segue, I usually allow you to do the segues, Tyler Wade was in there. Tyler Wade was 0-for-1. Tyler Wade's okay at defense. He's better than Graham Pauly. Graham Pauly maybe hits a home run. Maybe he goes 0-for-4, doesn't get the catcher interference. You know, doesn't get hit by the pitch, doesn't work a walk. I wanted to segue into a very valid topic of what the heck is Graham Pauly doing here?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? Padres called him back up. It was before Saturday's game, Friday's game.
Yes, Saturday.
Saturday's game. Before Saturday's game, they insert him in the starting lineup. And the assumption, based on everything that they've said, is, well, we're not going to bring a guy up to sit him, right? He plays Saturday, sits Sunday.
Yep.
So what's the situation at third? Can you help clarify a confusing situation for me?
Well, Eddie Rosario will go tonight. That's virtually certain in that Austin Gomber is on the mound for the Rockies. But when you have a right-hander on the mound, which usually you do, and that the Padres anticipate facing here for a stretch, it's either Tyler Wade or Graham Pauly, right? And, you know, Tyler Wade, we talked about, he's a better defender. He's a veteran who maybe, you know, going to find a way to get on base. Graham Pauly might ultimately be the better player. Well, first time he came up, you were like, well, it's cool. And they were like, it's cool. He can handle only playing every once in a while and all that. And yeah, that sort of made sense. Like, this is the guy we think is best for us right now. But also his development is important. So we send him down to AAA to get some playing time. Suddenly he's here. And all the word was pretty much gonna play. And then he wasn't in there the second game. I don't think it's because he made an error the day before and was 0-for-2 and didn't look real great doing it. They felt, you know, Mike Schilt, and I didn't ask him, but I know what his answer would have been. They felt that Tyler Wade was the better guy to do it. Joe, you know, is very good at turning double plays, leads the league, or he's not turning them. I'm sorry. I could probably
inducing
learn.
Inducing them.
To use the English language. But and Tyler Wade is the superior defender. Remember, Grant Pauley's kind of a guy without a position. He's a bat that they find places, and he's working very hard to be good defensively. Now it happens to be at third base. That might not be his position long-term. So I do expect that Grant Pauley is going to play quite a bit while he is up here. Remember, Manny Machado is the designated hitter, is probably a week, maybe a little more away from getting into the lineup as the third baseman. And then we'll be having a different conversation about how all this works.
A different conversation, maybe one involving Donovan Solano, who started his AAA assignment this weekend. Somebody who I think is looked at as a major league piece somewhere.
Has excelled the past couple years in a part-time role.
Yep.
For the Reds and the Twins, and it's exactly what they're looking for.
Right. And so this is his window. I mean, if we're talking about Grant Pauley, Grant Pauley's got a week, right? He's a left-handed bat, which they need. They don't necessarily need a starting third baseman or an everyday third baseman once Manny Machado returns. To me, this is sort of his window, sort of just opened, and it'll probably close the second Manny Machado decides to play.
If he's hot, he could be the DH, or he could be the DH against certain guys. He could get spot starts because Manny Machado's, according to what Mike Schilt has said, not going to go like every day. It'll be a day on, day off, day on, day off, two on, day off, three on, whatever, right? So you're still going to need a guy, right? And but the guy more suited, because that's what he's been, plus his particular attributes to be the utility guy, is Tyler Wade.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And, you know, Mike Schilt said something interesting again in your Padres Daily about versatility, right? That they don't want to hold Tyler Wade's versatility against him, right? Just because he can play different positions doesn't mean he's locked into playing different positions. Go ahead.
That's a nice thing for Mike to say, but that's just how it goes for a guy like Tyler Wade. And I'm a big Tyler Wade fan the context of, I think he can be a winning piece, not a winning piece like a Jackson Merrill or a Jake Cronenworth, who I'm always kind of talking about are probably going to be better players than their numbers, but a winning piece, a utility player, came up in a good organization, knows how to play. You know, that's a winning piece.
You know who he reminds me of a little bit? And I just think left-handed bat utility guy, grew up in a good organization, can help you win game. Little Greg Garcia, I think.
Yes, with a little bit. With a better glove. But yes, yeah. Now, Greg Garcia, mm-hmm. I'm really bummed that the pinch hitter went away, basically. Right. The pitchers stopped hitting for Greg Garcia, because I've never seen a guy, or it's rare, that a guy even has to do this, know his weaknesses and not allow pitchers to exploit them, and doing it on a part-time basis, like not getting regular at-bats. Like, Greg Garcia was an awesome pinch hitter.
Yeah. No, you're right. The days of guys like John Vanderwall and Dave Hansen and you know, players like that, Mark Sweeney, coming off the bench.
I will say this. What has replaced it, and especially with Mike Schilt, though, I do believe Bob Melvin would have done more with a different kind of roster like the one he has now, but especially with Mike Schilt, but all over the league, the platoon, that has helped. It hasn't replaced you having to have two or three pinch hitters a game, possibly with in the old National League. But, there have been, I believe, two games this year where Mike Schilt has not made at least one move. And usually he's making multiple moves in terms of defensive replacements and or pinch hitters.
Nice. Kevin, we talk about Eddie Rosario on here a lot because he fascinates me, and only me, I think. But this is a guy who's, I think, shown the ability to get extra base hits, to, I mean, when he hits a ball, he crushes it. Is this the kind of guy who can play on the short side of a platoon, whether it's a third, second, or somewhere else?
Sure. Absolutely. He's their best guy. You notice that he's the guy put in as a defensive replacement. Right. So, you know, no matter what, like that's your guy that right now. And so, yes. And I think it's fascinating, you know, what a 655, just kidding. I'm looking at John Kelly has it on the bottom. Like I know that there are some numbers I know, but I didn't know that one, but thanks John. 276 batting average and a 655 slugging percentage. That's quite a variance because he has one single, a dribbler that died on the dirt, on a full, you know, swinging bunt. And, he has, was it five doubles and two homers.
And compare that to somebody like Tyler Wade, right? Whose slug and batting average look pretty similar, right?
Yeah.
Tyler Wade's a singles hitter. Let's go through a couple more things here before we let you go. Xander Bogaerts, lots of talk about his early season slump. He certainly seems to be saying all the right things. And then Sunday he did one of the right things, which was park a home run and seemed to take a little bit of the heat off of him. We're looking at his numbers here again, you know, a slug of 290. Batting average of 204. That's not going to get it done in the big leagues, but it sounds like there's reason to believe that he can get untracked here.
He has said all along that he's actually seen the ball really well. It's the swing and then the mechanics of the whole thing. And maybe he fixed that. It's something he's done before. He's constantly working. I mean, as I wrote in the Padres Daily, like if you watch down at Petco Park, now usually on the visiting, as a matter of fact, everyone I can think of, the visiting team's batting cage is right behind their dugout. You don't see it. But the Padres in at home, you can go out of a tunnel. And so all fans can see, hey, who's going to work on their, you know, during in between innings. Well, it's Xander Bogaerts most often. The guy is just constantly working. And so he changed up some things yesterday in the middle of an at-bat and three pitches later hit a home run, stuck with that the rest of the day. So after striking out in his first at-bat, homers in his second, then went, I believe, single – a line drive to center field, which is rare for him this year, and a walk. So a much better day, like all the signs of him doing like better things, which really it's the process right now, right? Like to get you back on track. Like he says, he's not the kind of guy that waits around for hits to fall. Like if it ain't it, it ain't it, he said. Right. So.
Well, it's funny, Kevin, you know, we've spent years and years and years trying to decode whether it's Manny Machado or Will Myers, players like that, where indications that they're seeing the ball and hitting the ball well, right? For Will Myers, that was always going opposite field, right? For Xander Bogaerts, it seems to be using all fields too, in terms of that's how you know he's going good. And it seems like he's using all fields a little bit more.
Yeah, it is. Yes. And like you could say that that's one of those things that's absolutely true. And then it's more true for some guys than others, but it's true for almost everyone. The thing about Xander is he also has this swing and he knows the game that when he's going really well, there's a lot of broken bat singles and you know, like soft singles as well. But when he's going bad, like a lot of guys, it's rolling over for him to the left side. And holy smokes, has that been happening a lot lately?
Yeah, it has. It has. Well, I guess Coors Field is as good a place as any if you're trying to get untracked and trying to get over a slump.
As long as you just ease into it, you know, just let it happen for you.
Right. Yeah, Kevin, anecdotally or statistically, you can take this however you want, but which player typically feasts at Coors Field?
Well, it used to be Will Myers. So
yeah, right. Matt Kemp.
You know, yeah. I don't – it's been so mediocre when they've come here, this group, right? Mm-hmm. Like – Tatis has had some big games here. Manny's had some big games here. Yeah, there's not like this standout like you knew, like, you know, Myers was slugging like, you know, 700 here or whatever, right? Like, you know, he's one of the greatest Coors Field visitors of all time. There isn't that guy. It just should be that they have better pitching. So are the numbers going to be great? Nah, probably not. But at Coors Field, all you're trying to do is just allow fewer runs than your team scores. Now, but like, how can I explain that? You know what I'm saying, right? Like, okay, I gave up a five spot, but that was good. Like my team it's 5-4 right now, right? And we got four innings to play. I mean, this game could end up being, you know, 20-13. So like it's a different way of managing with both patience and then you got to know, okay, this guy is not working out here today in Coors Field. So like I said, it'll be interesting. Like Dylan Cease, incredible movement on his pitches. Like that should be good enough here. It's not going to probably be as good, but he can get it done. He's a pitcher like Joe Musgrove and Yu Darvish who, you know, rely on a lot of spin. They get it done here. And, you know, good Dylan Cease, who throws a lot top of the zone a lot. He did in the last game. That was really good. Needs to keep it down a little bit because, you know, balls do fly here.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Kevin, can we talk about Robert Suarez for a minute? I saw a statistic yesterday that I didn't quite believe, but apparently it's true. He threw only four seam fastballs yesterday. Got a save?
10 of them. 66 in a row, 66 pitches in a row over, I believe, what is now six games in which he has only thrown the four seam and the sinker. And I think the sinker's like five times. Has not thrown a changeup since what, like April 3rd. And against his four seam fastball, opponents are, I think, 2-for-20 now, 2-for-19, 17, I don't know. But it's like 118 batting average. So his thought is it's working. You know, the change will come back when it needs to come back. Like, you know, maybe he just needs to show it. Maybe a guy is fouling off a bunch of pitches and he needs to get out of the inning. Look, the difference between the fastball and the sinker is enough that it works. And the fastball freaking pops, man. Now, you know, like, yes, it's average, you know, it's whatever its average is, high 97. He could go, he went over 100, I think, once or twice yesterday. But it just, whoa, there's some where guys are like, oh, that pops and I can't see it. I'll be honest with you, right? Like, right? It's like with a batting mechanic or a pitching mechanic. I probably have to watch the video more than Ruben Niebla, right? Yeah. But like Robert, you could see his, it pops.
Yeah, this is somebody, again, we talked about it, but there were some real question marks about him heading into the season. You know, he had a weird year last year. He was hurt and he had the sticky stuff suspension. You know, he's got a contract that's paying him significant money. He sort of had to be the guy. And so far he's been every bit as advertised this year.
Yeah. And I don't want to take anything away from him. Like he's pitched in some real, you know, save is a high leverage situation, right. But like for generally, but he's pitched in some high leverage situations. Like, strictly like, wow, that's tough. And some of the saves too have been, you know, three runs, you know? So, you know, he's holding a 3-run lead in the pitcher's park or something. And it's like, okay, he's got a ways to go to be good Josh Hader, but that's okay. That's unfair to like compare him to that because you're absolutely right. Like he's answered the bell. He's got 7 saves, has not blown one, hasn't done, you know, what some of those blow ups that he's had in past seasons and probably will have this season because virtually everyone does. Couldn't have been a better start.
Yep. You know who's not good Josh Hader anymore?
He's going through that thing he went through when he first got to the Padres. It appears where there's this something like mechanical, like something where, I mean, it was pretty remarkable.
Absolutely. Between he and Blake Snell, again, like signing so late in the process and going to a place and I don't know, man, comfort. I think that there's something to be said for comfort a lot of places. And Blake Snell and Rob and Josh Hader are both really struggling.
When will the money, and I don't judge anyone. You go, boy, you go get your money.
Get paid.
No judgment here. When is it that the money's enough that you're comfortable, right? Like the team you have. And look, the union to be mad at you, you know, everybody, but like where 70 million is enough to stay where your wife likes it and you like it and you like the coach and, you know, I don't know. I'm not talking about Josh Hader in particular. I'm just saying like, you know, guys who make those decisions, I respect that. I respect you going to get your money anywhere too.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's again, this is such a what have you done for me lately business. I'm sure that there are Giants and Astros fans out there wondering what the hell they're spending all their money on. In reality, both of these guys will probably revert to who they've been their whole careers. Two pretty good pitchers.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. All right, Kevin, last thing before we go. I typically put you on the spot, and so I'll do it again today. If we're ranking our least favorite places to cover a game, not because of anything other than the experience, the deadline situation, et cetera, et cetera. Where's Coors Field?
So not because of, like, what am I not supposed to factor in? Because this does affect the answer.
Let's put it this way. The Padres used to have a radio broadcaster who wouldn't go to Coors Field because he didn't want to call games there. Because
they would last 5 hours.
Because it would last 5 hours, and you've got to fill 20 hours on the air, let's say, over a four-hour or four-game thing. Do you have a similar version of that now, or has the humidor made it resemble baseball in a way that this is just another game for you, Kevin Acey, beat reporter?
The humidor and pitch clock have made it much better.
Okay.
The ballpark is beautiful. So if we are taking out external factors like the airport being, 100 miles away and downtown having kind of deteriorated because it used to be one of my favorite cities, if not like my favorite NFL city. Mm-hmm. So if we're taking that out and we're just talking where to cover a game in terms of a professional, Coors Field's great. You got 1 hour difference, though that always messes me up. You give me 2 or 3 hours away, I can keep it straight. 1 hour away, I'm constantly confused. But anyway, that's me. Love Coors Field. Love Coors Field. Do not like that it's in Denver. It can still get a little janky, these games, mm-hmm. even with the pitch clock and the humidor. Dodger Stadium is rough. You're the visitor. It's a late batting practice. You get your notes done late. You're on a California deadline. They start at 7:10 there more often than not. Dodger Stadium's rough. Oracle Park is rough. Arizona can be rough. Plus, that's just the worst Arizona ballpark. It's not even a ballpark. It's a stadium. Coors Field's a delight. It really is. And especially now, current right. conditions.
And Kevin Acey, you're a mountains guy more so than a beach guy, correct?
I'm a mountains guy more than a beach guy. I don't like sand. Sand is, it's sandy. And I love the mountains.
Awesome. Well, that'll be a good place to stop. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. Padres-Rockies, four-game series. Then they return home Friday to play 3 against the Philadelphia Phillies. And that's when we will talk to you guys next. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.